Support for IPR and this podcast comes from the University of Iowa's John Papa John Entrepreneurial Center and their National Science Foundation I-Corps Training Program, helping faculty, staff, and students make an impact with their innovations and research. More at iowajpec.org.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Later this hour, we'll find out about Essential Workers, A Portrait, a University of Iowa theater arts project that helps us get to know and honor those who cannot stay safe at home during this pandemic. But first, 2020 has been a hard year for everyone, and the Meskwaki settlement near Tama has not been spared. COVID-19 has made people sick and cost them their jobs. The settlement was in the path of the derecho that swept across the state in August, destroying trees, knocking out power, and damaging crops. Shelley Buffalo is local foods coordinator with Meskwaki Food Sovereignty and Meskwaki Workforce Development. Today at noon, she'll be giving a virtual lecture on food sovereignty through the State Historical Society as they mark National Native American Heritage Month. The lecture is free and open to the public, and she is on the line with me now. Hello, Shelley.
Hi, Charity.
Oh, thank you so much for being here today. And I know it's been such an incredibly difficult year. I do want to start with that because it's something that I know everybody has been struggling with. How has the pandemic affected you and your community on the settlement?
Well, it's one of the things that has our tribal operations and community very concerned, of course, and I think that goes for, the economies of the world right now, is that our primary source of revenue is an entertainment venue, which is our Meskwaki Casino. And of course, this spring, because of COVID, it was it was shut down for a couple of months. And then when we did reopen it, that had to be at reduced capacity. So we have seen customers come back to the casino. But of course, the numbers are not anywhere like they used to be. And in addition to the casino, there's also two hotels attached. There's a bingo hall. There's also a whole convention center that used to host activities. All of this has been affected. And that's, like I said, that's the primary revenue. It's the big revenue stream, not only for Meskwaki, but for South Tama County. I think at the height of employment at the casino, I think there may have been well over 1,000 jobs provided by the casino. So, there's been layoffs. So it's really troubling. We're having to take a hard look at our economies.
Absolutely. Here. Yeah. Well, and I know that in coming together and making sure that everyone is safe and has enough to eat, that your food sovereignty organization has played a really important role in that. You've been building this local food movement and the food sovereignty organization for a number of years. And I think a lot of people, when they hear the phrase food sovereignty, probably have no idea what that means. So let's start there. What does it mean?
Well, I happen to have our food sovereignty strategic plan here handy, so I can just read it off. Food sovereignty is the right of people, communities, and countries to define their own agricultural, labor, fishing, food, and land policies, which are ecologically, socially, economically, and culturally appropriate to their unique circumstances. That's the broad definition. For Meskwaki people, our food sovereignty is centered in our ancestral foods and farming. And it's not just farming. There's, the traditional diet of the Meskwaki was a seasonal diet, a year-round diet, which included not only the foods that we farmed, but such a vast a vast variety of foraged foods. I mean, you know, our grandparents had an amazing, amazing, intimate knowledge of the land that has, you know, through modernity and colonization, you know, that's been replaced with, you know, and I think that goes with, once again, you know, this is, it's dramatically affected our community, but I think, you know, if we're looking at, you know, that knowledge base across the world, you know, that it's all been affected by, you know, the way that our food is produced and controlled now.
Well, and with a native community, it's far more significantly altered, because with settlement of this country, the traditional way of life was disrupted. And of course, the colonizers worked to make native people dependent on them and would supplement their food or make them dependent on food that came from them. So that it's not just modernity, it was deeply, deeply disrupted by the colonization of this country.
Yeah, I mean, there are, you know, intentional policies and intentional actions to kind of deny food sovereignty for Native people. So, like, if, you know, right now we're, you know, one of the themes of discussion is Thanksgiving. And if we look at that original relationship between the colonizers and the tribes of the East Coast, where the Thanksgiving, you know, I would say even like mythology, came from. So the colonists would have not survived without the sharing of food and foodways, and as once again, that intimate knowledge of the land, and the, you know, the heart of our culture, our traditional culture, is reciprocity. And the heart of Meskwaki culture is what we call, you know, our kinship system. So that is the system that binds us together. That's how we take care of each other. So it's interesting that then what the colonizers turned around and did after their Thanksgiving is that they destroyed thousands of acres of crops. Specifically, like, you know, I'd have to look up the story, but I think it's specifically the Wampanoag people who are recognized as, you know, the, quote, friendly Indians to the pilgrims. And so that's just, you know, and that was, it's kind of a, you know, it's a siege tactic that, you know, was used for, you know, probably thousands of years in Europe. And then it was brought here. And in a larger perspective, as I'm struggling to, I guess, heal those parts within myself, you know, I'm struggling to, I guess, calm the rage that this knowledge incites within me. And I think one of the perspectives that I've developed on it is that the people who came here brought their own trauma. And so the actions that they took as colonizers of this land was enacting their own trauma that they experienced coming from, you know, where they came from. And then specifically, you know, if we really take apart racism, I believe that racism is an aspect of that trauma. It's a symptom of it. So I think, like, if we try to just grasp this worldview and this overall arc of humanity, I think it's good to look at things in that term, like our shared human experience.
In trying to reconnect and redevelop some of the old ways of growing food and that original diet that the Meskwaki people would have depended on, what kind of sources do you have access to that you have been able to go back to really understand that diet? Because through that destruction, I mean, so much knowledge was lost.
Fortunately for the Meskwaki tribe, we have a unique unique situation here. So I'm very thankful for our leaders back in the 19th century that had the foresight to take their own sovereignty in their own hands. And it's funny because the Meskwaki have a reputation, historical reputation of being extremely resistant to adopting the colonizers' culture. But this is one tactic that they did adopt, which is they purchased this land here in central Iowa. And it's a pretty amazing feat that they accomplished. And, this was back mid-century, 19th century, that this all kind of came into, the process came into being. And the amazing, the wonderful thing about it is that this afforded us a certain level of autonomy, although we were still subject to, the whims of the BIA and as well as, the character of the BIA field agent who provided us with resources.
Right. And Shelley, we're going to have to take a short break. All right. We'll be back in just a moment. My guest is Shelley Buffalo of the Meskwaki. She is giving a virtual lecture today on food sovereignty through the State Historical Society as they mark National Native American Heritage Month that is free and open to the public. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from the University of Iowa's John Papa John Entrepreneurial Center and their National Science Foundation ICOR Training Program, helping faculty, staff, and students make an impact with their innovations and research. More at iowajpec.org.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. My guest is Shelley Buffalo. She is local foods coordinator with Meskwaki Food Sovereignty and Meskwaki Workforce Development. Today at noon, she'll be giving a virtual lecture on food sovereignty through the State Historical Society as they mark National Native American Heritage Month. The lecture is free and open to the public. I've just tweeted out a link from my Twitter account so that you can attend. You can also find information about it online. Again, that's at noon today. And Shelley, just before the break, we were talking about how the unique history of the Meskwaki, the fact that they came back to Iowa, bought land, and created their own community, their own settlement here in Iowa, helped to protect a lot of the heritage, a lot of the ancestral knowledge for the Meskwaki people, the kind of thing that was lost from so many tribes through the systemic actions of the U.S. government. So tell me more about what you have access to, and as you have been growing these traditional foods, the kinds of things that you grow.
Yeah, well, I mean, ultimately it's the tenacity of the Meskwaki people to hold on to those ancestral ways, plus that strategic vision, that what it did is it preserved our food ways in a way that many, many other Native communities here in the United States had not been able to do. The forces that were exerted upon them were just too much, which includes boarding school. The beautiful thing here is that we still have families who have, in continuity from generation to generation, have continued their Meskwaki foods and gardening practices. So we have that cooking knowledge and that farming knowledge and the handing down of seeds. And so these are, the primary foods that, you know, probably most of you listeners are also most familiar with is corn, beans, and squash. That also includes other foods such as watermelon and I mean, like, this is like garden foods, watermelon, and we also grow sunflowers. And there's probably some in there that I'm forgetting too. But the incredible thing about when you hold those seeds in your hands and that you, when you plant them and you take care of your garden, is that that accomplishes this amazing reconnection to, you know, for me as a Meskwaki woman, to my grandmother. All of my grandmothers going back thousands and thousands of years, where these seeds and these foodways and our relationships with these foods, which are, goes deeper than, first and foremost, these are foods. This is what, even genetically, you know, on a cellular level, we have a deep relationship with. But these foods are also part of our spiritual life here, part of our ceremonies, and they're inextricable from all of that. So, like, you know, I encourage all of the young people here that are part of this community, like, if they are interested in re-engaging with their Meskwaki culture, like, this is, in a way, I don't really want to call it this, but in a way, like, this is your shortcut. is your shortcut.
A really visceral connection, just a really powerful connection.
Yeah,
that's beautiful. And there's a seed that has been passed down for thousands of years. The Tama Flint corn is 4,000 years old. Tell us about Tama Flint corn.
Tama Flint is, I know my visits with Jonathan Buffalo, who's our tribal historian, he's told me that, you know, Tama Flint corn is the most studied corn by, scientific institutions. And it's often puzzling to these institutions because it's hard for them to really nail down. Like, has it been with the Meskwaki 3,000 years or 4,000 years? And even looking, doing that genetic tracing to even what part. But for us Meskwaki, in our traditional perspective, this corn has been with us since the beginning of our people. This is part of our creation. The relationship with this corn is so important. I have seen, I've had the privilege through my position as local foods coordinator, as well as having a family garden, I've had the privilege of seeing, like, firsthand how this corn brings joy to our elders. This is like, just the ultimate form of food happiness when they have that in their hands. There's nothing like it. Like I said, that connection is that powerful.
There is it's so beautiful to look at too. I mean, it's a corn that has so many different colors and is just really stunning. How do you use it?
Well, we have a number of processing methods. The most popular method is to pick the green corn, before it's mature, but it's before it goes to seed stage. We parboil it. And usually, about 15 or 20 minutes, you can kind of see if you, watch it change, slightly change color in the pot. You can see, you know, when it's time to take it out. Once it's cooled, it is shelled and then sun dried. And when you're ready to, fix it for a food, it's most commonly, the primary way to fix it is in a soup and adding, meat to it, some salt. It's really a simple dish, but it's absolutely amazing. And there's something about that, that drying process in the sun that, enhances the flavor. So that's like the most treasured and sought after kind of processed version of our corn. We also have a way of using our seed corn, we parch it, for example, in a cast iron pan. We heat that up and toast those kernels, and then it's been made into kind of like a kind of a dish that's similar to grits, because we grind that corn up enough where the kernels are fine, but you also have a powder that you add back in to thicken that, and you sweeten that with a little bit of maple syrup and add a little bit of fat in there. That's another, not only a traditional food, but, it's a ceremonial food. It's treasured. we have certain cooks out here that have this reputation of making the best, and it's like, even though the recipe is simple, there's just something about their method that take it over the top. There's also a hominy that's called Nix. So it's using hardwood ash to remove the outer shell of that kernel. And nixtamalization. I have problems with that word.
I'm not going to attempt it. So
I know. And that's a method that comes out of Central America, that's nixtamal. So that method, I am still learning that. So the wonderful thing about working in the food sovereignty circles is that for the Upper Great Lakes region in particular, we have just this amazing network of growers and of chefs and knowledge keepers and allies, so that if there's any missing pieces of the puzzle, if there's a practice such as that the practice of making hominy, which fell out of practice here, we can pick it up through this larger network. That's really, anytime I've kind of, I guess, hit my own dead end, my experience and my education, it's still ongoing. I'm a learner. Working with food sovereignty has regenerated my relationships with my community. I'm trying to think of the right word. Regeneration is such a new buzzword, but it's something that it really like instills in you the understanding of that interdependence and that interconnectedness with each other.
And this year has even deepened that for you, hasn't it? I know that the Local Foods Initiative has really played an important role in making sure that everyone on the settlement has enough to eat, given all of the difficult things that COVID has brought. But also, then you had the derecho come through and flatten your corn crop. And that was something that really brought people together, right?
It did. Because of the pandemic, our program had cuts to staffing, and so we couldn't bring on 5 seasonal staff members to help us manage our gardens and the harvest and processing and everything. So there was that left 2 of us to try to produce and as much as we could. Even though that's not like our primary, that's not our primary objective as for local foods. I want to mention Red Earth Gardens is the production farm for the Meskwaki tribe, and so they are the entity that can produce quantities of market vegetables. And before the derecho, it was eggs too, that can supplement, the diet here, through their program, through purchasing from our program for food distribution, as well as like the diabetes program and other partnerships, to get those healthy, organically grown vegetables to the community members. And it sounds all very good, but it's this process really takes a lot of persistence. But specific to derecho, like I said, Red Earth Gardens lost their chickens to the derecho. It just there was no warning, so they couldn't put the earth anchors down on their portable chicken houses because those were pasture raised eggs, It was just the community just loved those, and we were able to access them at affordable prices instead of like $5 per dozen. Yeah. But for us, the derecho, it flattened our corn, and so we had to just do a mad rush to try to save as much corn as possible. It's in our teachings that you don't waste that corn. Like every kernel wasted is a form of like grief and sadness. So we didn't have seasonals to help us. So we put a call out for volunteers. And so we had day volunteers of folks from the larger Iowa community that I knew through our environmental and water protector circles. And Krista Snow, who's a community member and she works for the American Indian Council. She was able to organize a stipend program for paid volunteers so they could stay on with us longer, as well as some of those individuals needed that workforce experience in order to find, to have the person that, could recommend them for a permanent job that they applied for. And so, over the course from August through the beginning of October, we were able to retain 2 ladies from our community that helped us finish that, not only process the corn and do the drying, but as well as like finish out our harvest and take, I think it was almost a ton of food that was donated to Meskwaki Senior Services. So we couldn't have done it without their help. And as well as the young men that were early on volunteers that came in for the most, like, the dire need to get that corn harvested.
Right,
and
to get processed. It up off the ground and save what you could of it. I know a lot of us saw corn crops that were just flattened and yours got a direct hit. Shelley, we only have about a minute left. And we talked earlier about Thanksgiving and, this mythology that people embrace or reject more and more often now. But it is a time when families gather and share meals, and hopefully people will make safe choices and not gather this year. But people will be sitting down around the table. What do you want them to think about to maybe reframe their ideas of what this holiday is about?
Well, no matter how they embrace Thanksgiving, as far as like the history of it, the complicated history of it, I want them to sit down and really think about the foods So in particular, our indigenous corn, that is the corn that has spread across the entire world to be cultivated. That first cultivation was some 7,500 years ago, so 7,500 years ago, and it was indigenous scientific methods of cross-pollination that developed, the incredible diversity of corn seed, and whether it's for flour or, you know, there's all, or popcorn or kind of a sweet corn that you eat in the green stage, or, you know, like our Tama Flint corn, which
something
has
we all depend on every single day.
Yeah.
Shelley, we're out of time, but thank you so much for being here today.
Yeah, thank you, Charity.
Shelley Buffalo is local foods coordinator with Meskwaki Food Sovereignty and Meskwaki Workforce Development. She's speaking at noon through the State Historical Society as they mark National Native American Heritage Month. The lecture is free and virtual.